You're listening to the Farmyard Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? And our Patreon supporters.
Episode 14, For the Love of Gluten-Free Food, with host Linda Borgi and guest Carmela Decker.
Hello, everyone. Linda Borgi here from Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? Here once again, podcasting away with wonderfully interesting guests. And I'm so glad that I was in the Hudson Valley for 11 years. That was where my urban farming career was. During that time period, I met such interesting people. Carmela Decker being one of them, definitely in the top 10. So that's who we will have on today. So let me get on and read you her biography. All right. This is Carmela's biography. I was born in a small town in Italy called Bernarda. When I was about 5 years old, we moved to the city of Taranta, a seaside city near Naples, Italy. I lived there until I was 12 years old. In 1973, my family immigrated to the United States in search of a better life. We settled in Jersey City, New Jersey, since several of my mother's brothers and sisters were already there. This made us feel a little more comfortable in this strange new home. One of my biggest challenges was actually learning the English language, but like everything else in life, you adjust and you move forward. My passion for food started at a young age. I was very lucky to grow up on homemade bread, pasta, and even sausage. My mother was a great cook. She loved it so much that even towards the end of her life, she spoke about going home from the hospital and cooking a great meal for our family get-together. I've learned quite a lot of old world secrets from her, and even though she rarely measured anything and cooked mostly by feel, this opened up my senses on what it really means to be a chef. I actually started my career journey at a nursing school, but soon learned I could not stand the sight of blood. So it was on to Adelphi University to take up nutrition for a future as a dietitian. While I was interning at the hospital, I would bring homemade treats to my coworkers who would always comment on why I was studying to be a dietitian. One day by chance, one of the dietitians and I took a trip to this wonderful place she always talked about, where the smells in the air excited her senses. This was the Culinary Institute of America. She was right. My excitement inside came to life, and my passion for food grew stronger with each passing day. I attended the CIA and graduated with an Associate of Occupational Science degree in 1983. I returned in 1989 to complete my bachelor's degree and graduated with honors. My practical work experience has included, drum roll please, the Rainbow Room, the Empire State Building, Alfredo's at Walt Disney's Epcot Center, executive chef in private restaurants and country clubs, account manager for Sodexo and Morrison Food Service Management. I love what I do. My culinary passion shines through in everything. I use this passion to mentor anyone who I come in contact with a food preparation service setting. The food you prepare for yourself and others represents you and what you are in every bite when you are a chef. doing something you love and seeing the enjoyment of your customers, no matter what the setting or occasion, is truly the best reward that you can have. A little over 7 years ago, I was diagnosed with celiac disease. That's when my challenge as a chef really started. I began purchasing and trying gluten-free items at the store, stores, and specialty shops. Sadly, the taste and texture was just not there, and so my adventures began. I continued to develop my own versions of delicious baked goods, as well as traditional culinary delights. 4 years ago, I decided to package and sell these wonderful treats for everyone to enjoy. Take a look and see if you're around my neighborhood. That's the Hudson Valley, my friends. Come and see me, as you are all welcome. Oh my goodness gracious, Carmela, aren't you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh boy, that is someone jam-packed bio, my girlfriend.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Actually, hearing you reading it, you know, I just realized, wow, you know, I accomplished a lot.
You know, that's why I make all the guests write down their bios and send them to me, because we forget what we've done in the past if we don't remind ourselves, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I want to start this by letting everyone know how you and I met.
Oh, you want me to tell?
Why don't you tell them, Camille?
Well, we met at a farmer's market. So, and it was, you know, the farmer's market was not that great, but, our friendship definitely developed into a great one. So I'm very grateful and thankful for that. I met you.
Sugarloaf, New York.
Yes.
Oh, dear God. In the rain, we went. We sat there. Nobody came, but we kept on sitting there.
You kept entertaining us, I have to tell you. And eating your flowers.
Oh, eating my flowers. I've got them growing outside here, the nasturtiums.
Yes.
I just made some nasturtium pesto the other day. I have to tell you, it was really a ball. So, in actuality, my dear one, until I read your bio, I would not have had a clue about any of this. Seriously, because we didn't talk about the Rainbow Room, did we?
No.
No, we talked about everything you brought. Oh my God, that food. Excuse me. So, you know, what I would love for you to do is to, in fact, take the listeners back to Naples, to when you were young. What was the culture? Do you remember what the culture was when you lived in Italy around food? And was it different from when you came to the United States?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was different because, you know, I grew up, you know, I was in a small town, you know, so my family was farmers. So, you know, we spent a lot of time at the farm. And once we moved to the city, my summer was spent. That was my summer vacation. We used to be on the farm, you know, helping my uncle and my cousin. You know, they grew mostly lemons and oranges. Trees.
Yeah.
But they also grew, you know, vegetables and stuff like that, mostly for their own selves to eat. But they used to share, you know, once again, don't forget, I'm talking about late 60s, early 70s. They used to share with their neighbors, farmers, and they used to trade, you know, stuff and whatever. Farming, to be living on a farm for me is very natural because it brings a lot of happy memories, you know, you know, some disgusting ones like killing the chickens and whatever, you know, I don't really like that kind of stuff. I cook with it, but I don't like to kill anything. So, you know, I mean, stupid to say, but that's basically me as a chef, you know, and people laugh when I say that. But I mean, it was a great experience, you know, just picking, you know, my God, those oranges right out of the tree, those lemons. I mean, if I close my eyes, I actually smell it, even though it's been, you know, 40 years plus.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. It's just that whole experience of using those fresh, you know, ingredients, you know, making your own cheese, your own sausage, you know, and everything else, you know, and I think, you know, there in Italy, and I haven't been back for a while, but I know my sister, she goes every year. I think it's a little bit different. You know, I think there's still a greater passion when it comes to food and what they prepare. You know, I mean, they actually have butchers there. Here, you hardly see any. You have to go to a supermarket. I mean, they have a butcher, but it's different to actually have a store that's actually, it's a butcher, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I grew up, when I grew up, we had the butcher down the street. The German butcher. It was the German butcher down the street. And you know, you said something like, you don't like to kill anything. Well, that is not your field, you know, but even though you don't like that as an act, right? You still have that, you were still given that skill set that you could pull out of your, like a rabbit out of a hat, if you needed to kill a chicken, you could, because you know how to do that. And that brings me back to when I was younger, when I was 7 years old, my family were, there were six children, we were six children at the time, three boys and three girls. And we lived outside of Rome in Lido. And my father had to go north on business, and he dropped me off at my little grandmother's house outside of Venice. And my father didn't teach us how to speak Italian. And even the Italians have difficulty in understanding Phoenician. It seems to be a dialect one unto itself. So for whatever reason, I understood every single thing that that woman said to me. And as soon as we arrived, she said, "Are you hungry?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Well, go outside and catch a chicken." And I said, "Okay." And now I was seven. It was probably only 10 minutes that I was trying to catch a bird, which I didn't successfully catch a bird. But in my mind, I was running for hours, and she came out of that doorway, and I could picture her. I could see she was a little aggravated, and she did not even look down. She just put her hand down and she had a chicken. That woman was a goddess to me. And we went inside, and my fascination, and we put the feathers and took the stuff out. And I sat down to a bowl of chicken soup like I had never eaten before. And it's that moment that I became a farmer. And I said to myself, I'm going to be just like you when I grow up. Now, my brother Mark, who is a famous fine art dealer who has an art gallery in West Palm Beach, he cried for 3 days and wouldn't eat a thing. So we're different. We're all right. Different, you know, we're all different, but with every bite we take, that's an act in agriculture. So we really have to, you know, I feel bad, Carmela, you know, up in the Hudson Valley, I could go to Montgomery, you know, and pick up my meat, you know, and I knew the farmer.
Right.
That grew that meat. But where I'm living now, they don't have that. And even chickens, they have free range chickens, but they're still eating genetically modified corn. So it's different. It's just different. So let's get back to your history. So then you came, how old were you when you settled in, when you went to Jersey City?
I was 12 when I came to this country. Well, 11, 12. 12. So.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, 12 years old. And
dear God.
And I didn't want to come here. Actually, my parents tricked me. They told me we were going on vacation. And and it was a very long vacation. You know, it took me like a couple of months to realize, you know, when are we going back, you know, home? And they were like, you know, we're going to stay here for a little while. Well, you know, it's been 40 years plus that I live in this country.
Mama.
So actually, I live more in this country than I lived in Italy. But so, yeah. You know, but
how long did it take you to have command? How long did it take you to get command of the English language that you felt you had command of the English language?
It took me by the time I went to, because I started here in fifth grade. When I came, they put me in fifth grade. In a way, sadly, I didn't really start learning English until I almost got into the seventh grade. And that
2 years.
Because the teacher just did not really care. I mean, you know, I would just sit there and nod my head and whatever, and pretty much, you know, and I mean, they used to have like, you know, special class, you would go for an hour that they would teach you English and whatever. And that was pretty much it. But once I got into seventh grade, I had actually an Italian teacher, Mrs. Kitts. I'll never forget her. And she took me under her wing, and that's when I started learning the language. Because she's no, you're not going to sit in my classroom and pass and think that you, because you don't speak the language, I'm going to pass you. I don't think so. So, you know, and that's pretty much it. So I really learned, you know, seventh grade. And even when I went into eighth grade, she still like, you know, kept an eye on me, and she still, you know, helped me through a lot of times and whatever. So, you know, it probably took me about 3 years to actually be a little bit fluent. You know, I mean, you know, after 6-7 months, you know, the basic words and whatever you understand, but, you know, to actually, you know, understand everything and speak a little bit more fluently, I would say probably about, you know, 3 years. By the time I went to high school, I pretty much, you know, I was good. I was in good shape.
You were good to go.
Yes.
You know, we must be sisters from another mother, because my father, even though he was Italian, we thought he was part gypsy. Because when I was 16 years old, now there's eight of us, mind you, right? We had a bank conference table as our dinner table, you know? And we all sat down for dinner every night. You know, God forbid you said anything. He ruled with an iron fist. He said, okay, in 2 weeks, we're all moving to Spain.
Wow.
Now, as a sophomore in high school, that was not music to my ears. In fact, I ran away and hid in my girlfriend Hillary Baumgarten's basement for 3 days, but I knew that wasn't going to last long term, you know?
Yep.
So he takes us, and the reason why he did it is we were living, his art gallery was in Lyndhurst, New Jersey, and a lot of drugs were coming in out of the Lincoln Tunnel. So he decided he was just going to pick his family up and move them to a country where the Guardia Civil walked around with sawed-off machine guns. I mean, dear God up in heaven. So he drops us there right now. He goes back and forth to the States on business, but he plops us in Spanish-speaking schools. Now, we didn't know any Spanish, right?
Right.
So just before we were to go to school, I went into town, and I was sure, if I said the word pencil loud enough and clear enough, they would understand me, right? Well, lápiz, that was the first word I learned in Spanish, was lápiz. And I passed in school their grade. I passed that year by the skin of my teeth, but I passed. I mean, I had to take Greek. I had to translate the Greek into English and then the English into Spanish, right? Then he moves us back to this country. And when I bring back my records from the school here, you know what they said to me? Oh, we don't fool around in this country. We don't accept any of that. I said, you don't? I said, well, why don't you just give me the final exam in Spanish, you know? Nope. They put me back a year. Well, the hell with that. The end of my junior year, I dropped out. I said, I'm not doing this another year. Really? And thank God that I did, because look at where I am today. You got to see me in here, Carmela, you die. It's like a recording studio. All these wires, headphones, all these screens. And I'm looking out the window, and what do I see? A beautiful salt marsh. I'm so sorry we missed each other. Carmela was coming to visit a couple of months back, but I wasn't even going to be here, so no sense in her coming, right? But you're a traveling girl, man. You got some nice tan going on.
Yes, well, you know, I was in Florida. Well, as you know, went twice this year. You know, first time with my husband, and then I went back just me. You know, I stayed at my sister's a condo in Fort Lauderdale, so. So I went to the beach every day. I was by myself because my knees worked. So what am I going to do? So, you know, pretty much I used to pack myself up and go to the beach. So, yeah, so pretty much I worked on a tan. Yes.
Yeah, I'm playing the violin for you. I feel so bad.
I know. That's what everybody was telling me when I was putting posts on Facebook. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, keep on doing it. You know, keep on rubbing it in that, you know, you're in a beautiful, sunny, you know, 80 degrees, you know, and stuff like that and whatever. So, but I love Florida. I mean, I love the down south. I would love to move down there, you know, if I had the means of doing it. But, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, that's my goal to do that.
Well, honey, it seems like, and that's a perfect segue to what I want to talk about now, because man, you've been doing farmers markets like mad, Missy. I want you to tell the listeners how that has progressed. Like when you started after you were diagnosed, having celiac disease, and you and I had a conversation prior to, the recording, and I don't know if you could hear that, but those are those big bomber jets. They fly overhead here from Paris Island. I live in Beaufort, and they call it the sound of freedom. So it shakes the windows. I don't know. I don't feel too free when they go overhead. But we were talking about glyphosate and Roundup, how it is in fact affecting our guts. And a lot of people have a gluten intolerance. They are intolerant to gluten. And I'm not sure how many of the listeners are aware that, okay, wheat is in fact not genetically modified. There is no genetically modified wheat. But the process in harvesting wheat is that after it's harvested, it is soaked in Roundup to dry it up. So if your wheat is not organic, it is blowing up your belly. But so you were diagnosed with celiac. Your brother was diagnosed with. Why don't you tell them about that? How your brother, you had suffered. Tell them a little bit about that, and then how you started your business, and then what was your first farmer's market, and then we'll go fast forward to where you are right now.
Well, you know, I was sick for a long time. You know, even before I got diagnosed with celiac, for like six, seven years. You know, I had stomach problems. Whatever I ate would just make me sick. You know, and towards the end, before I got diagnosed, you know, I pretty much was eating salads. And that was even making me sick. You know, I remember I used to tell my husband, but I don't understand. All I had was a salad. Why is making me sick?
God.
It was the dressing, of course, you know, because, and I'm a big dresser. I love my salad well-dressed and whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I used to pile it in there into my salad. Well, you know, of course, a lot of salads nowadays, even the ones that you think does not have any wheat in it, has wheat in it. And that was making me sick. So, my small intestine started shutting down on me. I just could not eat. Whatever I was eating, you know, I would just get ill, very sick. I used to throw up and whatever. So, I wound up being in a hospital. And I was in a hospital for a while. And they pretty much had to do a gastro bypass on me. Because I went underweight, which, you know, I still laugh it off because that was the first time in my life. Well, maybe not the first time, maybe the second time that I was actually underweight anyway, and stuff like that. You know, then I had not even one doctor when I was in a hospital, you know, said, you know, let's test you for celiac. It wasn't until my brother got diagnosed that he looked at me and said, I bet you have celiac. And I went to the doctor, got a blood work done. Of course, it came out positive. And then, of course, I had to go for endoscopy just to make sure that, you know, I did have celiac. Because, you know, it could be, you know, I was allergic or sensitive to gluten or whatever. But the way I was sick, I knew I probably had celiac just because, I used to be sick all the time, you know, almost on a daily basis. So, and it was affecting me, my body. I had really bad joint pains. I had migraine headaches where I couldn't even get up out of bed, fatigue. I mean, I used to be tired. I used to get up in the morning and say, oh my God, I have to go to work and work a 12-hour shift. And I'm already tired, you know, and that kind of deal and whatever. And it's funny because ever since I went gluten-free, all those symptoms went away. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, my migraine headaches, very rarely do I get them. I mean, very, very rarely. And most of the time, if I get them, it's because I'm cheating. I'm eating gluten.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's one of the symptoms. As soon as I get a migraine headache, I'm like, ah, shoot, you know, and mm-hmm. whatever mm-hmm. and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And, you know, and it's funny because a lot of my customers, they have a lot of the same symptoms because that's usually what I ask them when they come up to my tent, you know, and they says, oh, I just got diagnosed with celiac or wheat allergies or whatever. And I always ask them, well, what are your symptoms? You know, or sometimes I have somebody come up to me and says, you know, what exactly is the symptoms of, you know, if you have celiac or if you have wheat allergies, you know, and I tell them. And you know, what the thing is with wheat allergies or even with celiac, the symptoms varies from people to people. You know, I mean, I have customers that they never get sick to their stomach. You know, their stomach never hurts. They never get cramps. They never get anything else. But they have really bad joint. They get migraine headache. They feel tired. They feel bloated and all that stuff, which they're all symptoms of celiac. So, you know, so it's amazing sometimes when I talk to different customers, different people, what their symptoms are and what they are. At the same time, they have celiac, but we all different. You know, we all have different symptoms.
You know, it's funny. In your bio, you had said, you know, so now you're diagnosed and you know, you can't find food that tastes right, that tastes good. And I attribute that, honest to God, and I'm going to say it right out loud that I'm being a little prejudiced. When you're Italian, I mean, you just want to have good food. And when I was in my mid-30s, my family and I moved to a small island off the coast of Rhode Island called Block Island, tiny, 7 miles long by 3 miles at its widest point. And the only way to get there was by plane or by ferry. And I could not get any fresh mozzarella. So what did I do? What did I do? I got a Jersey. I got a cow. I bought me a cow, a Jersey, because the Jerseys have the highest butterfat content, right? Their milk has the highest butterfat content. And now in Rhode Island, you can't sell raw milk. And we didn't have any pigs. And this Jersey was giving us 5 gallons of milk a day when we started milking her. And I don't care how much mozzarella cheese you can eat. You can't eat that much cheese. So I called the Department of Health and I said, hello, my name is Linda and I would like to be licensed to sell cheese to the public. And the man, Tony Patassi, I'll never forget this as long as I live. He says, oh, that's wonderful. That's great. He said, how many's in your herd? I said, one. And he started to laugh. He started to laugh so hard that I started to laugh. And when we were both done laughing, he said to me, you have to pasteurize. I said, I know. I've already been to the library, Louis Pasteur, and I spieled off all the, you know, the requirements. I said, well, what size is the smallest pasteurization machine? He said, 500 gallons. I said, I'll call you back. So I had managed four-star restaurants on the Upper East Side of Manhattan before we moved to this island. So I call my restaurant supply guy, Norman, down on Canal Street, Mata's Restaurant Supply. And I said, Norman, send me up a 5-gallon stainless steel double boiler with a lid. He said, what? I said, just send it to me, Norman. And the pot came. I put it on my dining room table. And I tell you, for 2 weeks straight, I said to that pot, you're going to be a pasteurization machine when you grow up. Then all of a sudden it dawned on me, when that 500-gallon machine breaks down, who do they call? I called Tony Patassi. He told me, Oliver Dean in Boston. So I called Oliver Dean, and I got a woman on the phone. Thank God. And I said, I've got this 5-gallon stainless steel double boiler with a lid that wants to be a pasteurization machine when she grows up. She said, well, we've never. I said, I'm sure you haven't. Well, Tony Patassi issued my license and went ahead and called 38 states to see if they had anyone licensed to sell cheese to the public and had a herd of one, and not one of them. I was the only one. 5-gallon pasteurization machine. Bingo, bango, bongo. Right, Camilla?
Right.
I wasn't going to live without fresh mozzarella. I'm sorry. Yeah. I am sorry.
Well, you could have made ricotta cheese too. You could have made that.
Well, yeah, I made ricotta. I made farmer's cheese, you know, and at that time I had to have, the enzymes, you know, the culture flown in on dry ice from Canada, from Roger's Institute, because when I made it on the stove, right, it was completely different taste than when I pasteurized it. And honest to God, I didn't understand it. I said to myself, now look what you have to do. You have to go in there. You have to kill everything. And now you have to re-inoculate it. Now you're going to be God and put the life in. The cheese I made, the mozzarella cheese I made on the stove had the taste of the earth, and the pasteurized one, it wasn't so good. But these are all skill sets, but it was my desire, my passion to have that food, to have that pure, clean, rich food. So I want you to tell the listeners about the first time you put, you know, a gluten-free yuck in your mouth and you said, oh no, this is not going to do.
Yeah, it was like mostly bread, you know, not that I don't consider myself a big bread person, but if I want to have a sandwich, I want to have a sandwich. So, you know, it was mostly bread, you know, even crackers, you know, and anybody that's gluten-free knows when you go to store and you buy, you know, bread, you buy crackers that's gluten-free, you know, it's not cheap. You know, you're paying, you know, whatever, those $6, $7, you know, $8, all depends bread it is and whatever. You know, but, you know, you want the taste to be there. You know, I hear a lot of people saying to me, oh, but it's gluten-free. It doesn't really have to taste good. You know, who says that? You know, why doesn't it have to taste good? So, you know, so it's pretty much is, you know, I was really disgusted, you know, even, you know, some of the meals, you know, sometimes I try some gluten-free frozen meals just because, you know, they didn't have the time or whatever, especially taking to work, because now I went to work. What am I going to make myself? Everything was contaminated because, you know, my staff in the kitchen did not, you know, clean everything, you know, from one thing to another. So a lot of times, you know, I will bring myself a frozen meal just to be on a safe side because I didn't want to get sick at work. You know, I didn't want to, you know, and stuff like that. So, but it used to be awful. So, you know, those little tiny meals, you know, $6, $7, you know, and they were just like, you know, and people actually buying this stuff and they're actually eating this stuff and they think it's good, you know, and that's pretty much, you know, and same thing with baked goods, you know, cookies and whatever and stuff like that. It was just awful. You know, it would just crumble right in front of you like muffins. You know, you took a bite and the rest used to be on the floor, you know, because if you didn't have a plate, because they did not balance the flours, they did not balance what's in it. You know, xenem gum is a binder for the gluten-free flours. If you don't put that in there, that's what it gives elasticity to the bread or to the dough. And so it's very important that you use either guar gum or xenem gum because it binds it together. It's a glue. So, and a lot of people, you know, they will make muffins and they will not put that in there. And what happened is, you know, it will fall apart. You know, I always tell my customers, when you buy something fresh, gluten-free in a, you know, one of the specialty, you know, stores or whatever, and you take a bite and the rest is on the floor in your plate, it's because probably does not have any guar gum or xenem gum. They forgot to put it in there, and that's why it falls apart. But, you know, once again, you know, the frustration was, you know, that you're paying for a muffin $3, $4. You know, so and now you cannot eat it, you know, because it's in the plate and it's crumbs and stuff like that. So, but that's when I started experimenting with recipes and, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, and, you know, I mean, I do most of my baked goods, the specialty baked goods. You know, I make a variety, probably about 12 variety of biscotti. I do regular. I do scones, and you know, and my scones they weigh different than the scones you buy, the regular ones you buy in the store. Mine are very soft. I use almond flour in all my baked goods, so that gives moisture. It's also protein, so it's low in carbs. So you know, when I get a diabetic coming my way, I always say, well, you know, you want something low in carbs, you know, buy my biscotti because you know they have a lot of nuts in them. It's made with almond flour. So it keeps your carbs really, really low, which, of course, for diabetic, you know, carbs turn to sugar and so on and so forth and whatever. So, you know, and that's really started me doing all the stuff that I started doing was, you know, because of that, because I'm like, you know, I cannot eat this stuff. And then once I start experimenting and I start making this stuff, you know, people were like, oh my God, you have to package this and sell it, because this doesn't even taste gluten free. Now you tasted my product and whatever.
Oh God. So, you know, oh God. I miss your products.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's basically what got me started. So I was like, well, you know what? Why not? You know, I was home, you know, they eliminated my position that I was an assistant director in a hospital of food service. They decided to eliminate my position. I was actually home. My mom was, you know, got very sick. She had cancer. Then she passed away. And, you know, and you rethink your life. You know, when you go through something like that, you think about your life and what you're doing. And, you know, so I said to my husband, I said, I want to start my own business. I said, I want to do this. I said, I want to try. I'm home. I really could not find a job in the Hudson Valley. I had to commute, you know, either to New York City or into New Jersey or Albany or whatever, because, you know, around me, there's really no higher positions like, a director.
No,
And, you know, and I wanted to stay in food service. I really didn't want to go back in a restaurant and work, you know, every night and the weekends and all that. I went through that. You know, I did my time. I really wanted to stay away from me doing that. So I was looking for more, you know, like a director of food service in one of the hospitals, because I do have a lot of healthcare experience on my resume. You know, I have about almost 20 years of experience in healthcare. So, you know, so that's what really started me doing my business. So I look into farmers market, you know, I call agriculture marketing, you know, they got me set up and whatever. I went to buy my business name and so on and so forth. And, you know, and I started doing farmers market. But I have to tell you, I didn't realize the work that goes into doing until I started doing it. I thought it was all peachy key. Oh, look, a farmers market. Let's stop and buy some fresh vegetables. But, you know, until you start doing it, that you have to pack your car. You pack your car, unload, put up your tent, set up, and then at the end of the day, you have to, after you sit there for 6-7 hours or 8 hours, whatever long the market is, now you have to unload, you know, put everything back in the car, go home, unload, because of course I have now also do food and stuff like that, so everything I have to go back in the refrigerator or the freezer or whatever it is and whatever, you know, and it's a lot of work, you know, so.
Yeah, it is.
You got to appreciate people that do farmers market a lot more than before when I only used to be a customer and I used to go to one, but also got me to appreciate all the wonderful fresh produce, you know, fresh fruit, seasonal fruit that I get to buy, you know, as soon as my table's set up, that's what I do. I go shopping.
Mm-hmm. Me too. That's exactly what I did.
You know, as soon as I used to get set up, you know, I used to go, I always tell, you know, my neighbor next to me, hey, watch my tent real quick. See what kind of vegetable is available, because I want to buy them right away, because sometimes, you know, I get busy and then, you know, the vegetables are gone, you know, and I will plan my menu for the next week, you know, and stuff like that. You know, and even my bones, you know, I do my own beef stock and whatever, you know, I buy bones for a low. I mean, like you said before, you know, my God, you know, you could get your meat, you know, where that meat is coming from, you know,
yes,
and stuff like that. You know, your neighbors, you know, like on my vegetable, I know who grows it. You know, I buy mushrooms, you know, I do a lot of stuff with mushrooms. A Madura farm, they right out of Goshen, they grow mushrooms.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's wonderful, like the variety of mushrooms that they carry. You know, they do about 10, 12 variety, you know. Mm-hmm. And I smell it. Customers think I'm nuts. You know, I go by there and I pick them up and I smell it. You know, like, you know, I'm getting high off of it, you know.
Well, they're treasures. That's what it is. Food that is fresh, that has just been harvested, are treasures. Treasures to our bodies, that's for sure. Because if we just take, the journey of the lettuce, right? And that's what they call me, a Walker Valley. Alan Greer named me the lettuce lady because I love everything about lettuce. I do. But if we just take even organic lettuce, right? That's in the stupid market today. Okay. It's in California. It has to get harvested, has to get washed, has to get bagged, has to go on a truck, has to go 3,000 miles to get to the distribution center, to get to the stupid market, to get to your car, to your refrigerator, to your salad bowl. Now you tell me, how much life force does that lettuce have? People say to me, well, what's life force? I say, well, take that trip and tell me how you feel when you get back. That's life force. That's what it is.
Yes.
You know, we have to eat the food where it's growing, and we have to grow the food where we are. I mean, God have mercy on me that out in California, up until this last rainstorm, right, that now they're no longer in a drought situation, although they were for 5 years. So does that mean that they're going to be okay for the next century? Well, I don't know, but I wouldn't put any money on it.
Right.
But before that rain came, they were watering vegetables with fracking wastewater.
Mm.
Now, Google it. I don't stay up nights making this shit up because I don't. I really, really don't. So the time has really come that we have to take responsibility, because food is a relationship, and it's really, truly, other than air and water, the only thing we have with every other person on this planet as a need. We need food, water, and air. So it's a connector. It's a connector from me to you and you to them. And I got to tell you, I hope it's to all of you and Carmela, because Carmela's stuff is so yummy. You're making, what do you make? You made eggplant rollatini, didn't you? That year I was in the market?
Yeah, eggplant rollatini, eggplant parmesan.
Oh, that rollatini. Oh, mamma me. Yeah. Oh, mamma me.
I mean, you know, since, you know, we were at the market together, which has been a couple of years now that, we're no longer doing the markets together. Well, you're not here anyway, so.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, I extended my food. Actually, this year, I'm going to be cutting down a lot of my big goods, and I'm going to be extending on my food just because that seems to be my most selling part, you know, of what I do, just because, you know, people, they're busy, you know, people,
yes.
You know, and you know what? And, you know, if you're gluten-free, it's not as easy of when you eat regular food where you could stop and pick up food. And like I see all the time, every single night, you know, that I'm out and about, that I see Burger King, McDonald's, the drive-through is all the way around the corner. Like, you know, it's the best food around. Don't miss that for 1 second, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. And I always shake my head and say, oh, my God, how can people eat that stuff? You know, but anyway, you know, so I do sell. I do have a lot of professional customers where they buy a lot of entrees from me. And they have food for the whole week, you know.
Tell me your entrees. Tell everyone your entrees this year. Oh, my God. I can't wait.
I do a lot of my Italian specialty, of course. Eggplant parmesan, eggplant rollatini, which are two of my top big seller. I do stuffed peppers. Actually, that's what I'm working on. When I start talking to you, and I'm going to finish after, I'm going to stuff them because I do have markets this weekend. I do stuffed peppers. I do both vegetarian style and with Angus beef in it. I do lasagna. Also, lasagna is one of my big seller that I sell. And all my pasta that I use, also, I support local vendors. You know, the Puma pasta, which they're also Italian, of course. Italian attracts Italians, you know.
We do.
They make, wonderful gluten-free pasta that you can even tell at the catering, and I served it, and people don't even know that's gluten-free. And, you know, so I get a lot of pasta from him. Actually, all my pasta I get from him and stuff like that. So I support also local small business because I want them to grow. Like, I want to grow. I also want them to grow. I do chicken francese. I do a whole bunch of chicken dishes, chicken francese, chicken marsala. I do soft chicken breast. I do like a japchae, which I don't know if you know what japchae is. It's a Korean dish. They made out of glass noodles. They also called sweet potato noodles. It's actually a japchae. It's a Korean national dish. It's like a lo mein, like a similar to a lo mein. The way the traditional, like if you go to a Korean restaurant and you get japchae, is usually made with a little bit of carrots and scallions, and that's about it. When I do it to sell at my market, I put a lot more vegetable. It's almost like a lo mein, like a vegetable lo mein kind of deal. That's also lovely. A big seller because, you know, attracts vegetarian, also so healthy for you, and stuff like that. I do a lot of stuff with quinoa. You know, a lot of people, and it's amazing. I mean, people do not even know what quinoa is.
I love quinoa.
Yes, I do a lot of salads with them. Like during the winter, I was doing with the roasted root vegetable, which my, you know, I buy once again, you know, they were available at the local market. So, you know, and it's all fresh, you know, once again, you know, and I tell people straight out, you know, if I make a chicken masala and I use Madura mushrooms, which most of the time I do because they give me very good price on it. And the mushrooms, I always say, you know, the mushrooms come from Madura farm. And, you know, and some of the customers do want to know what I'm getting my ingredients from. You know, they ask me, where do you get your chicken from? Well,
of course.
I really wish I could buy my chicken from, you know, pigs, eggs, you know, that she grows chicken, but I really can't afford to pay $7 a pound on chicken breast, you know.
Right.
So, you know, and the bulk that I use, because when I make it, you know, in a month, I go to about, you know, 30, 40 pounds of chicken.
Wow.
She doesn't have the volume, you know, for me, even if I was crazy enough for me to buy from her. So I get it from Guffle Road Chicken Poultry Store on Guffle Road in New Jersey. It's right in Wyckoff. And, I order from them. I call them up and I say, I want 20 pounds of chicken breast. And you know, and I go in and I pick it up. So, but people want to know where you're getting your, you know, I don't buy from ShopRite. I always tell people, I don't buy my, you know, chicken breast, or even my ground beef. I don't go into ShopRite. I said, because, you know, the next day you hear on the news, you know, there's a recall for this, there's a recall for that. I says, and I want to be able to feed. I want to be my entrees that I do. I want to make sure that it's safe enough, you know, for my customers, because I'm selling this, you know, and God forbid, I don't want to make anybody sick and whatever. So I always make sure that I know where I'm buying the product from, you know, even fish, when I do fish, which is, you know, not really, but I want to make sure that I buy from a fish company. I use Scaglietto by New Paltz, you know, it has fresh fish and it gives me a good deal. So, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, I try to make all my entree as natural and fresh ingredients are possibly canned, just because it's so much better for you.
Well, you know, that comes from not only your background of growing up, right, in Italy and your relationship to food, but also the knowledge you got at the CIA.
Of course. Yes.
And you just took, I saw you just took a 2-week class recently?
Yes, at the CIA, I took a gluten-free class.
Ah, I see.
And it's a lot of, you know, it's about connections, you know. I mean, I only leave 45 minutes from the culinary. I go up there a lot. Yep. Sometimes, you know, when I get down in the dumps and, you know, I'm like, maybe I should go to a different career. I don't know if I'm doing this, keep on cooking and whatever. You know, I was thinking about going to real estate. I'm like, you know, I could see myself selling homes, you know, like beautiful, especially when it's the kitchen. Oh, look how beautiful this kitchen is and stuff like that and whatever. You know, I go up to the culinary and, you know, and it's still, you know, it's funny because I went to school there, you know, between my associate and my bachelor for almost 4 years, you know, and, you know, I go there often, you know, to have dinner at the restaurants and whatever. And every single time I go, sometimes I go just to spend the day to see some of my professor, just chat and whatever. And, you know, as soon as I get in my car, I can even describe that inner, like, I want to go in the kitchen. I want to start cooking. You know, you like this, you know, just the smell of the stocks and the big goods and just like, you know, close your eyes and just like taking it all in, you know, the beautiful view of the Hudson River, you know, it's just like I said, it just brings everything together and it makes you appreciate what you do and the love that you have of what you're doing and what you're selling, you know, and basically that's what it is. You know, is be able to do that. So then I come home and I'm all pumped up and whatever. And I go back to do, you know, what I do, you know, I mean, and that's the reason why, I always tell people that, you know, young kids that come up to me, you know, sometimes I get students from the high school that they go to the vocational school and they says, oh yeah, I want to be a chef. And I'm like, well, you know, like, what do you like to do and whatever. And, you know, and I said, well, listen, I said, you know, when you go to culinary school, they teach you other stuff besides being in the kitchen. I said, you have to learn nutrition. You have to learn basic French, culinary French. They teach you all that. They teach sanitation. You have to be past sanitation. You have to be served safe. Like, I'm a served safe certified. Actually, I just took the class and I just passed and whatever and stuff like that. I said, because you have to know about, you know, what you're cooking, cross-contamination, bacteria, so on, or whatever. You know, so it's not as easy as people think. Oh, you go to culinary school, you're behind the kitchen, you're cooking all day. No.
No, that's not the way it is. You know, my uncle, my godfather, God rest his soul, was the head of the health department for Bergen County, New Jersey for 30 years. So I think I was probably 5 years old when I was taught how to fold a pizza box up into a 6-inch square. And God forbid you put the wrong thing in the 6 bins he had for compostable material in his kitchen. So I learned this very early on, food handling and so on and so forth. It's not just about learning how to saute now, is it?
No, absolutely not. You know, and so it's, you know, it's a lot more than just, you know, and I'm sure like other profession too. I don't think it's only culinary. I'm sure you have the same thing in other profession. You know, just like when my daughter took, you know, she wanted to become a hairdresser, you know, she started the vocational school. Well, you don't get behind, you know, and start cutting hair. You know, they gonna have to teach you other stuff. And she didn't like that. She wanted to start cutting hair. And I'm like, well, that's not the way it is.
That's just not the way it is. You know what, honey? If you ever consider selling any of your baked goods or any of that type of food online, I definitely could help you do that, because that is the training that I had to go through. I feel like I went through boot camp at Paris Island with the last 15 months learning how to teach online, because, you know, people really need these skills. I mean, we have students graduating from college and they don't even have the skill set to boil an egg or to balance a checkbook, let alone prepare eggplant rollatini. So, you know, maybe it might not be real estate. Maybe we'll do webinars with you, sweetie, online, and you could, it'll be, you know, right in your kitchen, you know, that'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Yes, it will be fun. And, you know, and it's fun because you said it, because, you know, I always tell people when I sell my eggplant parmesan and my eggplant rollatini, you know, my eggplant is not breaded, it's only egg batter. And people look at me and goes, you know, why you don't bread your eggplant? I said, well, I said, two reasons. I said, the first one is the part of Italy that I come from. We do not bread our eggplant. I said, we just egg battered. We season it and, you know, and we'll, you know, pan fry it, very little oil and stuff like that. As I said, that's the way I was brought up and that's the way I do it. You know, as a second thing, I said, I don't want, if I'm selling something that people are going to take it home, they're going to freeze it and then have it later, or they're going to go home and actually eat it, you know, warm it up and eat it. I says, do you imagine all that breadcrumbs? I said, you know, gets all soggy with the tomato sauce and all that. I said, it's disgusting. I said, I don't want people to eat breadcrumbs in their mouth. I want them to actually enjoy the nice eggplant, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, and that's, and people like just look at me and you know, they smile because they know I think of them when I'm cooking stuff. You know, it's not only to slap this food together and say, who cares? You know, I'm going to slap together, I'm going to sell it and whatever. No, because I want that customer to come back and buy more from me because they appreciate what I'm trying to do. You know, I mean, I use all fresh parsley, all fresh herbs, very little dry. I mean, I have my sister, she went to Italy last year. She, you know, she goes every year, every summer. She brought me, I don't know, I don't even know how many pounds it was, a large, gigantic bag of bay leaves.
Oh, my God.
From Italy. My cousin grows on his farm, and they were still fresh. She goes, make sure you put it in a pan and dry them out, if not, they're going to get molded. And let me tell you, Linda, I tell people, and people look at me like, you know, I have four heads. When I use my bay leaf into my tomato sauce or whatever sauce I'm making that I'm putting it in and stuff like that, it's different taste. But the bay
leaves, of course it is.
When you use dry bay leaves that you buy in a store and you put it in your whatever it is that you're making, and then you want to take it out and whatever, because of course you don't want to eat it, it's still very stiff. It's still very like hard. You really cannot chew it because you probably could choke on it. Now, the bay leaves from Italy, when I cook with it, they become actually mushy. I mean, they do not disappear, but actually they're bendable. They're very soft, and actually you could eat it. And so it's a different bay leaf, you know, and I tell this to people. I said, first thing, there's nothing on it. It's just bay leaves. You know, so my cousin doesn't spray anything, does not, you know, it just grows bay leaves, you know, and stuff like that. And I get the oregano from Italy, also from my cousin's farm, and I get paprika from them.
Crazy.
Brings all this stuff back. I make a list for her and say, make sure. And then when my father calls Italy, she'll tell my cousin, okay, Camilla wants this. Please make sure, you know, to have it ready. You know, when my sister Lena goes to Italy, so she could pick it up and she'll bring it back. She packages into her. And it's funny because when she came last year that she had like, I don't know, 10 pounds worth of bay leaves. She goes, I hope they're not going to take it from me in my suitcase, because sometimes when you go to custom, they open your suitcase. Yeah. I hope that, you know, they think it's like drugs or something. I said, it's bay leaves. It's not
sure. It's bay.
You know,
it's crazy.
So that's my passion for it, you know, and that's the difference between me and somebody else, you know, that cooks and whatever. That is the difference, you know, that I care what I put, that what I'm packaging, I care what I do, and whatever, and, you know, and that's the difference. And my customers see it, you know, they taste it, they bring other people saying, oh my God, you know, I brought my sister, or I brought my girlfriend, she tasted your eggplant, or she tasted your chicken franchise, and you know, and then now I have another customer that they're not even gluten free, but they buy my food because it's better and it's healthy.
Because it's yummy. It's yummy. That's why.
Yeah. So, you know, and basically that's it.
Well, I tell you, my dear, we have colorful black backgrounds, both of us, don't we? And
yes.
It all revolves around food. I will be heading north the end of May, and I'll be sure to call you up so we could go get a cup of Joe together.
Absolutely.
And I really want to thank you for spending this time with us. Really want to thank you, honey. You're an amazing woman.
Thank
and
you.
Tell Stephen I love him.
Oh, I will. Thank you so much.
Tell him I miss his beautiful smiling face, that face of his. He's such a, really, when I see pictures of your family gatherings and all that jazz, it just really warms my heart. It really makes me feel like a tribe member. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
All right, honey. Well, you take care.
Yes, you also.
And I'm going to put your link in the show notes, and I will see you on Facebook for sure.
Yes. And if anybody's interesting, you know, I'm on Facebook. That's pretty much the best way they could reach me. I always post what I do about my products and stuff like that. You know, since like Glutine by Carmella. So, yeah, absolutely. You know, that would be great.
I'll put your URL to your personal page, in the show notes for you, Camilla.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Linda.
Thank you, honey. You have a great week.
You too. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Next on the Farmyard Podcast, Native American Farming Wisdom with host Linda Borgie and guest Courtney Hale. This podcast is community supported. We thank everyone for tuning in, and a special thank you goes out to all our Patreon supporters. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe and share. You can help support us through Farm A Yard, all one word, on patreon.com.